Welcome to Synthaholics. My name is Aaron O'Brien. I am your host, and here with me today is Holly Michelle.
Woo woo!
What's up? We are missing one of our key members, Dave Duncan. He can't make it today. He was laid up because his avatar got sick.
Oh, those things are expensive.
They are very expensive, and they're going to have to do some reconstructive work and... It's going to be a long time.
Yeah.
So, Holly, we're talking Avatar, which is non-Star Trek, but that's kind of the direction we decided to go. We're going to get a little bit away from Star Trek, just in between Discovery and the new Picard show that's coming up. But we did get the trailer for the new Picard show.
We did.
And, here you have him basically in his vineyard that we've seen a couple times during the Next Generation episodes. Mm-hmm. And it's strangely enough, it tells you a lot without really showing you much.
Yeah.
And what did you feel about it, seeing that? I mean, we only got a glimpse of Patrick
him,
Stewart
but...
for a sec. Yeah.
I mean, definitely intrigued and excited, but ultimately I just loved, the frames and the narration and the possibilities of where it's going.
Yeah.
You know?
I the wording of it, that's what interested me.
Mm-hmm.
Because they said 15 years ago, so we're not 20 years ago, we're 15 years ago. And I think they made reference that he commanded one of the largest rescue armadas ever assembled.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, this has to do with the destruction of Romulus in their when their star goes supernova. Maybe Picard went in to save the Romulans, maybe survivors, and something bad happened during that time that made him kind of lose faith in the Federation.
Or
maybe something else. Maybe something all entirely. Maybe
that's
something.
A good idea.
It was like, 15 years. Well, it's not 20 years, so.
Right.
We don't know what's going to be about, but it's obviously we've been told it has to do with the Romulan, destruction of Romulus and the fallout and everything that happens afterwards. So, I'm very interested in that. And, it seems like he might have lost faith in maybe the institutions that he once believed in.
Yeah, maybe it wasn't the rescue that the Federation's painting it to be.
Yeah.
Or maybe they decided to black out something that...
Some bad stuff?
Yeah, and give him... high honors for something terrible, that would be very Picard, to step away from if they, tried to pass off this incident as a good thing. I could see him stepping away for something like that.
Yeah. I mean, in Insurrection, we saw the scene where they were going to displace like 1,000 people on that one planet that made them all live forever.
Mm-hmm.
And Picard was like, well, when's enough? When 1,000, 10,000, 1,000,000, when is it a crime? This is not what the Federation believes in. And he quit the Federation Starfleet at that moment, and obviously went rogue. But, that's just Picard. And I think that's one of the reasons we all love Picard is that, he's willing to, for his morality and ethics, he'll, he'll throw everything away for it.
Yeah.
You know, so, and we see it with, what is it, when Data makes Lol, and that one admiral wanted to take Lol away.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, you know, there's no way you're going to take, they're going to take your daughter.
Right. This is a living being.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah. So it's just, it's the cool thing about Picard, and it just always has been. So,
wasn't it kind of the same when there was that female Q?
Yeah.
And
well,
Q wanted to take her, and he was like, this needs to be her choice.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And he was Q was getting a little weird.
I mean, that wasn't like Federation related, but still shows his character.
Yeah. And I love that he always stands up to Q.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty amazing if you think about it. But
Jean-Luc Picard.
He's Jean-Luc. that's what makes him so great. And I am excited for this. I don't know if they said it was going to be 10 episodes, but it's not going to be super long. And I don't think it's going to repeat after that. So I don't know if this will be like a gate to more.
Is it going to be a mini series or is it going to be an actual television show? Like a limited series.
I think it's just a limited series, and I think he's only going to do it for this one little bit, but it might be opening up to different shows in the future. But I don't know. I mean, who knows? I mean, this is a whole new game with Star Trek, so.
Maybe they'll do a show for each, like, beloved officer. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, maybe we'll do one for Riker, and right. They'll do one for Beverly Crusher, and they'll do one for Data, you know. Yeah,
that'd be fascinating.
Great. Oh, I'd love a Barclay one. Barclay would be great, just all, like, freaked out and nervous all the time. That'd be great. Yeah, so cool stuff. Very exciting. Yeah. And I think we have to wait just to, is it December or January? I can't quite remember right off the top of my head.
I was so excited I didn't even see a date.
I don't think they posted one yet, but I think that's projected time, but, you know, gotcha. Who knows? They could kick it back a little longer too. Who knows? Post-production stuff with the special effects and, you know, editing could take them a little bit longer than they anticipate, you know.
Right.
So, but cool stuff. So we have that to look forward to in, I don't know, a couple months from now, 6 months or more.
Yee.
Yeah. But let's get into our main subject, Avatar.
Avatar
was a blockbuster movie, and it's hard to, you know, Avatar is like just one of those cultural things now. It's like it's gone way beyond just the idea of a movie. And I know, and we'll get into more there. I mean, there's some tropes and there's some archetypes that we've seen over and over again in different forms of entertainment and movies, of course. But it's, yeah, it just hit on full cylinders, and it hit, and visually it's probably the most stunning movie that's been put out to date in quite a while. I think we've maybe we're coming up to the point where we're catching up with that now, the level of production level. But this was so different.
This was like amazing for. I mean, it wasn't very long ago, but for its quote unquote for its time, it was incredible, and it still is.
It is. It still
holds up.
Yeah, and this was released, the release date was December, in U.S., release date was December 18th, 2009. So, you know, it was a good amount of time, 10 years ago. And and the budget was $273 million, and it made $2.788 billion. So it made a lot of money.
Yeah, it did.
And it probably is still making money for it. And there's sequels planned to come out, Avatar 2 and 3.
There are. And, you know, as much as I love this movie, and I really love this movie, I don't need sequels. Do you know what I mean? Like, I felt like this movie was so good just on its own, like, that I don't even need any more of Pandora. I don't, you know, I can watch this movie over and over and over and over and never get tired of it. I don't need any more.
I'm interested to see where they take it. Cause I think I think obviously if Pandora has the what's the mineral or the deposit stuff,
unobtainium,
unobtainium, that they're going to want to come back and they're
want to make a deal. I think that it doesn't make a lot of sense to come back for the unobtainium. Now, what makes sense is to come back to exploit the research that Augustine had done, because they let Parker go, and he, you know, just at the end of the film, they tell him, like, this is what's going on this planet. It's like a giant brain, and now he knows that, and he's off-world. So, granted, it takes, what, like 15 years to get to Pandora? So, like, how long is this going to be in the future? Like, but I don't know. I don't know. I just didn't feel like, I didn't feel like it lacked anything. So I feel like, I just didn't feel like I needed more, you know?
it did land on a decent high point. But, so if you haven't seen Avatar, for God's sake, stop the podcast, go rent it, go, you know, stream it. It's readily available, and, it's a good movie. You should watch it.
It really is.
Regardless, some people kind of poo-poo this movie for some different reasons, and it's still a damn good movie. I don't care what anybody says. It's you know, like I said, there's some common tropes that I think that people get kind of like, oh, it's just like this, it's just like that. Yeah, okay, but there's a lot of movies that are just like this, or like, you know, there's we see common tropes all the time.
Yeah.
And you know, it's how that lens is focused and what makes it interesting. So.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, what were you gonna say?
Like, my husband does not like make-believe. He really doesn't. And he only started watching Marvel films.
Yeah.
And the DC, you know, CW DC television shows because of Deadpool.
Oh, really?
That was the foot in the door. He still doesn't like make-believe. He likes the real gritty feel that Marvel gives us, and that's why he can stomach, you know, superhero stuff now. But he does not like fake anything. He doesn't like pretend. I finally got him to dress up for the Renaissance Festival, and then he just said, as long as I'm drunk, fine. But, like, he really likes this movie. And, like, he wouldn't be like, hey, let's watch Avatar. But the last time I had it on, I was just kidding around. I was like, oh, God, it's such a shitty movie. And he's like, I can't even remember what he said, but obviously he's being sarcastic, and he agreed. He's like, oh, yeah, such a bad, bad movie. And, like, you could tell he really enjoyed it. Like, he does. He really does enjoy this movie. And I don't think it's because Jake Sully was a Marine. I don't think that's it, because
it's more than that.
It obviously really is a great film. The storytelling, the imagery, you know, I don't know. I loved it all. And even my husband liked it. So if you haven't seen it and you want to see it before we spoil it for you, then go watch it. But who knows? You might enjoy our description of it more than you do watching it. So who knows?
Yeah, so definitely watch it. I mean, and if your husband Michael likes it, you know, it's at least a decent, you should watch it, because he's a no-nonsense kind of guy.
Yeah, his favorite films are Coach Carter, you know, Fast and the Furious, he does like John Wick, which is make believe, but still, like, he's not a
space
guy.
Alien.
He's definitely not an alien guy.
Yeah. Like, if you don't know, Avatar is directed and produced, written by the great James Cameron of Titanic fame. Nobody ever thought that he would beat anything with Titanic, but obviously this did pretty well for him. And, like I said, it did crazy good with in the box office, just insanely good. A lot of people didn't think it was going to do that well. Actually, they thought it was going to bomb.
Really?
Yeah. Strangely enough, the music score is done by James Horner, who also did Aliens, And he did one of my favorites is Star Trek II Wrath of Khan. So he did that as well. I mean, and then we have, it stars Sam Worthington as Jake Sully. Mm-hmm. And we got
Zoe Saldana, Sigourney yep. Weaver.
Sigourney Weaver from Aliens. So
she's Grace Augustine.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you got some great cast. And actually, I think Sam Worthington, I mean, I think he was in some stuff beforehand, but this was like his big breakout film.
I feel like it was too, because I don't remember seeing him before this. And honestly, the only other thing I really can say, oh, I know him from that, is the Terminator.
Was he in Terminator?
Yeah, he was the Terminator who thought he was, what's his name?
Schwarzenegger's character?
No. Basically, he was a soldier, and they took his memories and his physical appearance, and they put him out, like, around a Terminator shell. And sent him back to the, to the rebels.
Interesting.
And he had no idea he was a Terminator until he's finally gets into the camp and they don't trust him and, like, basically tear him in half. And he's, like, freaks. His acting was amazing. He's, like, just realizing that he's not who he thinks he is was, like, oh, so heartbreaking.
He's also in those remakes for Clash of the Titans.
Oh, see, I haven't watched those.
You know, I'm a big fan of the original because I kind of grew up with that one, but I know it's kind of hokey because it's all like stop motion graphics, but the new one obviously is over the top. There is some cool parts. I don't think it measures up completely, but the first one wasn't like, it's not Shakespeare. I mean, it's just, you know, it has a special place in my heart, but it's worth watching. It's fun. I can't remember if I saw the second one or not. I think I did, but I can't remember. But So Sam Worthington, this, I think, put him on the map, and
rightfully so. It was really great.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because it had been a while since I'd seen this. I know I seen it in the theater when it first came out in 3D, and that was the other thing is when this movie came out, it was all in 3D. Mm-hmm. And I think 3D was out there, but this was the first one to really utilize 3D. And it was just freaking amazing sitting in the theater, seeing, you know, them going through the forest and, you know, going through the plants and the trees. And I mean, it was just so, you know, awe-inspiring in 3D. So, I mean, that broke a boundary there. And now we see it all the time, basically.
Right.
And then, but I seen it afterward. I know because I distinctly remember my father-in-law getting this because he loved this movie, and he's a no nonsense ex-military kind of guy, and he loved it. You know, he loved the movie, so he just thought it was a beautiful movie. And every time we'd go over for holidays, he'd just pop an Avatar. Mm-hmm. It would just play, and I would just watch parts of it, and then go eat something or drink something and come back into the living room. So yeah, this is, you know, so I've seen this multiple times. It's just, now it's been a while now. So
it was nice to rewatch it.
It was nice. And there's things I missed. I think like, I really don't remember, Sam Worthington or Jake Sully's legs being that atrophied.
Oh, really?
I don't think I remember that.
It's probably because you were in awe of all the 3D shit you were looking at.
It might have been. It really might have been. It might have been like I just kind of glossed over it. It was like, oh, my God, look at that. Oh, my God, look at that. You know, so. But it was like just little things like that I started noticing. So, but yeah, it's a cool movie. Let's get into the breakdowns.
Yes. So it's 2154. It's a long time from now. And Jake Sully is a paraplegic veteran of the Marine Corps of planet Earth. We meet him as he is in cryo, or hypersleep, on his way to Pandora, an Earth-like moon off the planet Polyphemus in the Alpha Centauri star system. His twin brother, Tommy, was a scientist involved in the Avatar program on Pandora, but his life was cut short when he was murdered by a petty thief. So, because...
Bunch of jerks.
Right? Those bastards. You killed Kenny!
So, it'd be great if he's walking around in his avatar body. And they're, like, trying to pick his pockets. Right. I got no pockets.
So, because Jake and Tommy, just because their genomes match, they offer Jake Tommy's place in the program. And at his brother's funeral, no less, which was highly insensitive, even if the project costs a lot of money, I was like, wow, that really sucks. I mean...
Yeah, they were just sort of like, if you want the job, you got it.
Yeah, they're like, here's his contract, and Jake's, like, watching his brother's body burn in the cremation chamber. It's like, oh, that was, you bastards.
I kind of thought that. I was like, I know why they're doing it in some ways, just to put the effect of, you know, like, yeah, my brother died and this is rough. But the other thing is, they just got to rush through this. This can't take too long. You know, you can't do the setup for too long.
But,
you know,
I feel like it worked because when, like, right before it switched to him actually taking the contract, there's this quote that he says, and it just says, like, when one life ends, another begins. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of what I mean when I think this film has really great writing, because that's pretty much the whole
mantra
religion of the of the Na'vi.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, and I think they say it in some, not quite like that, but something very similar to it.
They do, yeah. When energy is only borrowed and you have to get
Yeah,
back.
That was it. Thank you.
Yeah. I've seen this movie a time or two.
Yes.
So anyway, Jake arrives on Pandora with other servicemen and women, basically guns for hire, for a security force for the RDA, which is a corporation on Pandora that is mining the planet for its valuable mineral called unobtainium.
Unobtained. You just cannot obtain it.
You can't.
It's not going to work.
Right.
You know, and it's funny, is like, Holly, do you really think these Marines and all these military types would be that mean to a guy in a wheelchair, calling him Meals on Wheels and stuff like that?
No.
That's pretty harsh.
Definitely not. And if he had come wearing specs and a button-up and a tie, maybe they would have been dickheads because,
Dexter,
he's a pogue.
Shit, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But he's clearly, you know, he's got a sea bag and he's clearly military. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, no. But Jake mentions in this little monologue that these guys used to be the best of the best, but now, you know, they traded in their honor for money, basically, is what he says in this part.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sort of like a Blackwater operation kind of thing. That's really what it is. You know, they're ex-military, or, you know, and they got hired out for something. And
And they're
cash in.
Yeah. And so this security force is there on Pandora because of the indigenous people of Pandora known as the Na'vi, who are blue, 8 feet tall, sapient humanoids who believe that every tree and creature has a precious life, and they want to protect them. Obviously, you would, too. You protect your home. So,
throw a stick around here. And people get pissed off.
So that's what the security force is there for. They're trying to, like, get the Na'vi out. And the scientists, however, are here to connect with the Na'vi, research their planet, and ultimately find a way to utilize their resources, you know, to either get the Na'vi to peacefully leave, or, you know, just share their resources.
Sure.
So the Pandora Project, the scientists in this scenario use the avatars which are human and Na'vi DNA put together. So they're basically hybrids. So they use the avatars to connect with the Na'vi because the atmosphere is toxic to humans, and if exposed to it, you'd pass out and 10 seconds and die after like 7 minutes or four, maybe. I can't remember. But it's seemed like a long time to last on a toxic planet when you're exposed to it.
The colonel goes out there more than once without his mask.
He does.
And he's a bit of a badass.
he's a nasty,
awful man, but he is a badass. You can't take that away.
That's right.
Did he really get that the guy who plays him, Stephen Lang, did he really bulk up that big? I mean, that guy was freaking huge.
I have no idea. I mean, with the amount of computer-generated, you know, stuff on this film, it's possible that he could have been bulked up in post-production, but yeah. I mean, he looked pretty real to me.
Yeah, I did too. I just didn't think he was that big, but I could be wrong, you know? Who the hell knows? What the hell do I know?
Right.
But, yeah. Anyways.
Yeah. So Jake meets Norm, which was Tommy's training partner.
Norm.
Oh, isn't he so nice?
He turns kind of a dick for a while.
He does become, he's green, he's green instead of blue.
Yeah.
He's a little green
exactly.
with envy.
A little green,
So, Norm and Jake are both going to be Avatar drivers. The Avatars, as I said, are grown from human DNA mixed with the DNA of the Na'vi, and they are amazing. As scientists do, Jake begins to log his experiences on Pandora via video log. He meets the head of the Avatar program, Grace Augustine, who we mentioned earlier, which pisses her off because she doesn't want a soldier. She wants another scientist. And I loved, Jake's line here, you know, well, I'm sorry, it's such an inconvenience to you. Like, sorry,
yeah,
my brother's death is so bad for you.
I know, it kind of, like, it cut her short
And she storms off, and she takes it up with Parker, the head of the RDA, who declares Jake is Grace's security guard. Mm-hmm. He also makes it clear to Grace that the only reason the project is up and running is because they're there for the unobtainium. So, essentially, suck it up, Buttercup, and find us a diplomatic solution that we need to get what we want.
it really is, for her character, it's a very difficult thing that she's put up against. Mm-hmm. You know, to try to broker some kind of a deal between the Na'vi and the humans, and they're kind of being huge dicks about everything. And then on top of it, the Na'vi, they're just not really interested in anything they have.
No.
Which we'll get into later, but...
Yeah. Well, now it's link time, and we actually get to see the Avatars in action. So, Jake gets into his Avatar, and, you know, he's paraplegic. He doesn't actually lose his shit, but he gets so excited that they try to sedate him.
Yeah, he goes running out.
Yeah.
Just knocking everybody over. Get out of my way! I can run now! I mean, honestly, who can blame him?
I know, you can't. I mean, how long has it been since he's used his legs?
It's probably been quite a few years, seeing how long those legs have been atrophied.
Yeah, exactly. Just to mention, the Avatar driver's link to their Avatar is basically a mental link, which is why it's so important that the DNA used to grow the Avatar matches the driver. So, anyway, Jake's running around now, enjoying his feeling of running and dirt under his feet, and he sees Grace and her Avatar, and then the next we see all the Avatars bunked up and going to sleep. When the Avatar falls asleep, Jake wakes up in his natural body in the science lab.
Right. So, does that mean that most of the Na'vi, like, are nocturnal, and then they wake up during the day and go to sleep, or is it...
I think for this... that's a really good point, but so when Neytiri finds Jake, it's just past sundown. I think the first night, it's mm-hmm. all, you know, in the middle of the night, but then as time goes on, he's there during the day. And then all of Jake's logs and everything are done late at night.
Right, right, gotcha.
So, yeah.
Understood. Yeah, and you know, he can take a nap for a couple hours and then get back in.
Right, which is so sucky, like, to be able to have to live your life. Like, they're not getting any rest when they're in that pod. Their consciousness is fully, you know, in the Avatar.
Right.
So they're awake. They're just not in their body. So
right.
They
physically might not be tired, but mentally are going to be completely shot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
right.
So after this, we get to meet Trudy the pilot. Who is played by
Michelle Rodriguez.
Michelle Rodriguez. I'm like, what's her first name? Michelle what's Rodriguez. What's
that lady's name?
Love her. I've loved her in everything she's done, but I loved Trudy. So she's the pilot for the scientists, and we meet her because she's taking Jake to Colonel Karich. We're just going to call him the Colonel.
the Colonel.
The Colonel. And he instructs Jake to basically spy on the scientists' work so he can take down the Omatakaya people. And being a Marine and not a scientist, he agrees, falling easily back into the routine of being in a command.
And he gets promised some new legs.
I was just going to say that. It also didn't hurt that the colonel promised he'd get the RDA to pay for his spinal surgery so he could get his legs back.
Yes.
So right. That was important. So, I mean, you know, yeah, Jake just had this amazing experience, but he's also looking at the reality of things. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So
who could say no to that?
Right? Who would? So while the science team is out for their first day, Jake, Norm, and Dr. Augustine are in their avatars, and they run into a panther-like beast, which is called a Thanator, and Jake takes off getting himself lost.
Yes. There's that fight scene between him and the, what's it called, a Thanators?
Thanator,
yeah, that was pretty cool. See him run around and get chased by that.
Yeah,
and you know, just running through the forest. So
all of the creatures on Pandora are fascinating, but yeah, the Thanator, it really is like this large panther, like it has the skin of like
a, I was thinking it's like of a jaguar actually.
Yeah, probably more of a jaguar, because panthers are smaller. Jaguars are bigger, right?
Yeah, and they're black.
Yeah.
And
yeah. So it's kind of like, what's that fish that doesn't have scales? It's just like an eel-y-like skin surface.
A moray eel?
But it looks like a, well, no, like it looks like a bass or a koi.
Ooh.
Probably just some weird Japanese bass. But, yeah, it's like got this glossy, smooth, almost fish-like skin.
The fish creature.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a cool creature. And you have to admit, almost, I can't think of anything here that this, the world building for this whole movie is unbelievable.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
So, I mean, new, I mean, the only thing I could say that was somewhat the same as obviously they have trees and there are ferns. I've seen multiple scenes with ferns in it. Mm-hmm. So, but that's about it.
Well, they used the rain. I know they used the rainforest for inspiration.
Sure.
And I only know that because of things I discovered about the extended edition, and we'll talk about it at the end.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, I know they used the rainforest and for inspiration, but obviously that's not, you know, they're not just filming in the rainforest. They're creating all of this. So this is where Jake meets a hunter. The hunter crosses his path and almost takes him out, but a floating seed lands on her arrow, which gives the hunter pause, and she puts her bow down. Intrigued, she stays on him and has to step in when he nearly loses his life to essentially a pack of dogs. You know, they have like 8 legs and whatnot. So like, they're not just like wild dogs. They're pretty terrifying. He thanks her for saving his life, but that just pisses her off.
Don't thank me. Spank me. No, I'm sorry. That was a Dave joke.
Oh. So this is the first exchange we see with a Na'vi, aside from the arrows in the tractor wheels on the flight deck when Jake arrives. But
right. He
follows her, and we see the seeds again, which we learn are seeds of a sacred tree, which are pure spirits. And they float down and land on Jake, but only his top half, which obviously we know is because his human body, his legs don't work. So, yes. So obviously this is, you know, an all-knowing, you know,
This thing is the part that really works.
Right, right. So anyway, the hunter at this point decides that he needs to be taken to Sahik, so she can interpret the will of Ewa, their deity. So Sahik is their spiritual, like, leader. Well, she's not the spiritual leader. She's the one who interprets Ewa, and then, you know, the chief is their spiritual leader. So Jake finds himself in the center of their village where outsiders are not permitted, especially Dreamwalkers, which are the avatars. Turns out, the hunter is the chief's daughter. Sahik is her mother. Her name is Moat. And the hunter's name is Natiri, which, I don't know where they come up with these names, but I like it.
Yeah, and it was interesting that James Cameron used a guy to basically produce the whole language for these for this whole thing.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, this guy came up with, I think I read like 2,000 or 3,000 words just on the language alone. And cool. James Cameron just put in certain words, but the other guy, you know, his whatever the language guy that he got hired linguist. To do that, linguist put the whole thing together. So that's pretty damn cool.
Yeah, I love language and I don't retain it and I don't study it. But whenever I hear someone speaking another language, I hope they don't think I'm judging them because I really am just appreciating. Like, yeah. their language. I don't know what they're saying. They could be talking about butt sex for all I know, but I'm just, enjoying literally listening to them talk.
You're like, wow, that's amazing. And they're like, oh, we're talking about butt sex. Like, right. Oh, never mind. Yeah, you know, it was years ago, I was out of the country, and I was with some friends, and they were speaking multiple languages at once. It was just, there was like four languages at play, like English and Spanish and some native languages. And it was totally stunning. And I stopped him. I go, are you speaking? Because I could pick up different, like, and I think it was Dutch too, was part of the language. I was like, are you speaking four languages? And they're like, yeah. And I go, why do you do that? And he goes, some words are mean things and they, some words mean more in a different language, and it's better to use that word than another word. You know, it's like, you know, you think about some words that we say have far more meaning behind them, you know, and I suppose it's just true for almost anything. So I thought it was fascinating, and I was like, that's totally cool that you can sit there and speak four languages. Just, right, rolling just rolling in and out. Yeah. Blew my mind.
Yeah. That is really cool. So back to Avatar, with a hilarious line. I think it's hilarious. The Omotsukaya Navi learn that Jake is no scientist, but a warrior, and are intrigued enough to let him stay. They call him the Warrior Dreamwalker, and Natiri is charged with teaching him their ways. His avatar goes to sleep and wakes up back in the lab in his own body where everyone is waiting to see
what happened. Because they thought he got chomped.
Right.
Like, he's dead for sure. We're just waiting for his body to die. He's like, yeah. I'm in their tribe, man. I'm part of the gang, finally. And Sigourney Weaver's character is like, go! Oh, I shouldn't have been such an asshole. I guess I gotta be friends with this guy now.
I know. You see her at the lunch table and she's like making jokes and it's like,
you hated that guy like 2 minutes ago.
You hate him. Yeah. Yeah, it was very funny. But so this is where we see Jake go to the colonel and
he's like, I'm in.
Jake learns the plan to take over the village of the Omotsukaya, tear down their home tree and mine the unobtainium deposit
and he's like,
the tree.
Even then he was like, okay, that seems like an asshole thing to do, but all right.
Yeah, he doesn't say much. He just kind of sits there and was like, observe. Like, he gave his information, and then they, like, showed him their cards, and he was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah. So, the training begins, and we learn about this thing called the Bond. Yes. So, I don't know how to really describe this. This is the best I can do. Maybe you have a better way. So, all the Na'vi and the Avatars have this connector or braid that runs from their skull.
As Dave would say, it's like a penis.
He does say it's like a penis. But it's like a long braid. And at the end of the braid, they have these, like, fajili, which are just, like, little feathery, like, living tentacle things. And they use this to bond with other animals or plants or things. It's their connection. Basically, it's their connection to AWA. I don't know how else to describe
and
it.
It's, I mean, technically, it's like tying two wires together.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And so we learn of this because they... You know, Jake's learning to ride their horses, and they use this to become one with it. So, basically, they are, I don't know, they're just, they're mentally linked. And they do this with not just their horses, but with their, for lack of a better word, their dragons. They call them banshees or ikrans, but they're, they're like dragons. But the training goes on, and Grace figures out that Jake is reporting back to the colonel and moves their base up into the Hallelujah Mountains, or the Floating Mountains on Pandora, where they can't be tracked because there's so much, like, there's something about the vortex and they their instruments don't really work up there.
Yeah, it's sort of like a hidden away place.
Yeah.
I wonder why they put that there in the first place, but, you know, maybe just to be all creepy and weird.
I mean, maybe. I mean, visually it's stunning, but
it's cool as hell.
They kind of, I think it's great that they did that. I think it's great that they did that, but because it kind of gave you, you know, seeing the Hallelujah Mountains this soon into the film, and then with the warrior challenge where Jake has to bond with an Ikran. It made it, you know, if you saw those floating mountains for the first time when he was on this quest, this warrior quest, you might have been like, wow, that's kind of gay. But now that you see them, like, do you know what I mean? You see them, like, nonchalantly, and then you see them, like, for, like, a spiritual purpose. So it's like, oh, wow, this is just, accept it. Accept it. Here it is. Accept it.
Right. You get to see it, and they keep on showing it again and again over time. So then you accept it as, like, all right, they're floating mountains.
Right. Yeah.
Doesn't make sense, but I guess
But here they
works.
Are.
Yes, exactly.
So, right, let's talk about the Ikrans. So Jake learns that in order to become a hunter and ultimately earn his place among the people, he has to bond with his own Ikran, or a dragon-like creature. And, hold on.
He's got to go climbing up a mountain just to, I don't know if it's the same mountain, the Hallelujah Mountains, but it's basically those that they go looking for.
Can you guys, hang on, Aaron? Girls, I'm going to need you to leave. I can hear you. The mic's going to be picking this whole thing up. It's okay. You can take the dragons. Just don't let your sister get Cheeto on them. Okay? Girls, it's like 11 o'clock for him. He's in New York. Just take all the dragons.
Take them all.
Take all. Okay, you can leave that there to dry. All right. And shut the door behind you, please. Thanks, Natter. Okay. So when he learns about these Ikrans, we learn this, you know, very interesting fact about the Ikrans.
They only have one rider, and it's like, they choose you. It's like, how do you know if they choose you? Like,
they'll try to kill you, so good luck with that. Which I think is great. Another great writing, piece of writing in here, because, well, you'll see later why I say that. So the Ikrans will only ever have one rider, and I did make a joke for David's sake that they're the ultimate ride-or-die bitch. That's for you, Dave. That's all you're getting from me. But yeah, when you go to choose your Ikran, if they try to kill you, that's how you know they've chosen you back. And you must win the fight and fly in order to make the bond. So, After he finds out about the Akrons and his mission to ultimately, you know, do that, he continues his video logs. The training continues. We watch Jake really, truly become an Omatakaya. You know, he falls in love with their way of life. And yes, he does fall in love with Neytiri.
Of course. You knew that was going to happen.
Grace is finally let back into the village. She previously had a school there, teaching English and studying the people, but the Omatakaya shut that down when things became more hostile. So Jake is finally ready to take the warrior test. He and the other young warriors in training scale the floating mountains and get to choose the Akrons. Jake is selected to go first. Of course, he has to choose the Akron, which we talked about. And he knows that that Akron will choose him by when it tries to kill him. So yes. The task is to bond with the Akron and fly. So with the bond, you essentially become the beast, and your thoughts are one. Mm-hmm. They fight, they bond, they fly. He wins! Woohoo!
It's pretty cool, I gotta admit. And it's cool to see him, go through trying to pick the right one, and they're all, like, super aggressive, obviously.
But they all turn their backs and, like, take off, and the one that goes after him is like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he almost got knocked off at one point, and he jumps right back on, so
mm-hmm.
It's great.
Yeah. So, like, it's probably been a few days. Jake's flying around with Neytiri. He learns about the Tree of Souls.
Yes.
It's the Omatakaya people's most sacred grounds. Jake also learns that the Akrons are not the only flying predators when he and Neytiri are pursued by Last Shadow, or Taruk.
And that's one of the things, too, in their legends, is that one of, like, her great-great-grandfather, like, tamed one of them.
Yes, Taruk Makto. Neytiri's great-great-grandfather was Taruk Makto, the writer of Last Shadow, and he brought the clans together in a time of great sorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so...
which they'll have again.
this is very interesting, and I love how they go about this, but Jake is now living life backwards. He feels like an Omatakaya, but...
His real life.
Yeah, it's profound that he's able to acknowledge this and like.
Yeah, well, I was gonna say the one thing is that Sigourney Weaver's character, Dr. Augustine, she's basically telling him you gotta eat, you gotta take care of yourself. He says you're
a shower marine.
Yeah, I mean basically because he's so entranced in this life, and then he's using his body as sort of just like a throwaway. And it's like, that's, you can't keep doing this, and you need to take a break. And obviously there's no way you could take a break right now.
Yeah.
He's in the middle of all this and trying to become part of their tribe. And so, but it is fascinating to see that now he's become so,
enamored
and just wrapped up in that world. And this is like his new life now, and he doesn't. I don't think he even realizes it until much later.
Yeah,
how much he's taken on to this lifestyle.
Yeah, well, around this time in the film, I felt like he was going to see the colonel, to tell him that he was out.
Yeah. But no.
And when he goes to see the colonel, the colonel tries to pull Jake out of the project and send him off to get his surgery. Yeah. And Jake's like, I'll convince the Omatakaya to move. I'm about to, be initiated. I'll have a voice. Mm. They'll trust me. We can do this peacefully. So that doesn't work out.
Yeah, but it seems, too, when he says that, the colonel's kind of pissed off.
Well, yeah, he's really calm, cool, and collected, and you're looking at him like, why are you so calm? How dare this guy just turned down these strings you pulled to get him spinal surgery.
Right,
and you're super calm.
Right. Well, but he's sort of just like, it seems like that wasn't the answer he wanted to hear.
He definitely wasn't.
He wanted
Jake out of the picture.
Yeah, and he wanted to basically just do what he needs to do.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, get what he needs getting.
Right, right, exactly.
Yeah, so about this time in the film, we also learn that the Na'vi can connect with the trees, like the Tree of Souls.
Sure.
So they can access the souls or memories from the lives of past Na'vi. Basically, Jake is accepted into the people, and Neytiri and Jake mate. So he and Neytiri promise themselves to each other and mate under one of these sacred trees. And Jake falls asleep, which we all know it can't be good. So he wakes up in the lab, and while he's asleep, the RDA trucks arrive to tear down.
He's sitting in the afterglow. He's like, "That was great sex. Just I'm going to take a nap for a long time now." And literally, right. There are trucks trying to run him over.
Yes, yes. He's in his pod. Neytiri is trying to drag his body away from the destruction of this tree, and he can't wake up.
Why don't you wake up? And even Sigourney Weaver's like, "You need to eat."
And she turns off the link pod.
Yeah.
Like, while he's getting in, and she's like, "Eat!" And, like, meanwhile, poor Neytiri is, like,
pulling
oh my
his
God.
Ass, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so Jake finally does come to, and shit really hits the fan at this point in the film. He and Neytiri, he takes out the cameras aboard this truck, and he and Neytiri head back to Hometree to warn the Omotakaya to leave. Grace is there already warning them not to strike, but the colonel knew where the science team was all along. Yes. And went there and ripped Jake out of the pod, breaking the link and stopping Jake from telling the people what the colonel was up to. Of course, you know, just right. In, you know, wrong time. So he'd been watching all of Jake's video logs, and he knows that Jake switched sides.
And Jake said, "What are we gonna? You know, these people don't want anything we have. You know,
they don't.
Like, what, they, you know, what are we gonna give them? Blue jeans and light beer.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they don't want that.
You
know,
don't want that.
And it's true, and it's hilarious too at the same time because you're like, there's nothing that you know the humans can offer that they want.
Yeah.
They're very satisfied. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they are connected to everything around them. They don't have wants. I mean, they've got wants and needs, but they don't have, no.
Yeah.
They're fine the way they are.
Yeah.
But they're never going to leave Hometree, and Jake says so in one of his video logs, and
that's all they needed. They just, like,
all they needed.
They're like, oh, yeah. So they're never going to move? All right, well, let's get the airships up and, you know, prep them, get them armed, and let's take it down.
Yeah, so, oh, I really wanted to mention this earlier. So, we just talked about how Neytiri and Jake just mated. So, Neytiri is destined to be the next Sahik.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sahik and the chief are a mated pair, and the next chief in line is Sute.
Right.
Who's been giving Jake shit this whole time.
Whole time.
And now Jake took his woman, and he ain't too happy. But anyway, if we jump back just a tiny bit before we go on. So after Jake's all pulled out, and Grace is pulled out, and they convince Parker to try and convince the people to leave Hometree.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And Grace explains that their neural network and all of the living things on Pandora are like an electrochemical communication system, so like a brain.
Right.
And it might be even more valuable than the unobtainium that he is mining.
But they just brush that all off.
I don't think. I think that the only reason they even let them go back was to see if he could save any you know casualties. But it doesn't really. So they go back to the Omotakaya, ask them to leave. You know, Jake basically tells them, "I was essentially a Trojan horse, and." Sorry, I knew this message was coming, and Neytiri's pissed.
Sure.
And even though Jake already earned his place among the people, he's now telling them that he knew it was a sham, and they take him hostage and tie them up, and Parker continues the assault on Hometree.
Yeah, and it looked like they were going to kill him at one point, too. But then,
so they, yeah, they were stringing them up. They, they strung them up on posts. And then, the colonel got to Hometree with all the ships and,
just let loose. They just, they first gas them to get them mostly, you know, smoke them out.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just start launching rockets into their tree and.
Yeah. Which all, they would not have had that intel without Jake explaining the structure of the tree. And that just really sucks because now Jake is got this heavy on him, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That sucks.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah, the takedown of Hometree was fairly simple. I mean, Trudy goes AWOL. She says, fuck that, and heads back to home base.
Why she isn't in lockdown after that, I don't really know.
I don't know either. But, so the tree comes down, or is about to finish coming down, and Moat frees Jake and Grace and pleads for Jake to help them. But the tree comes down anyway. Jake evacuates who he can, but the damage is done, and damn, that is a big fucking tree.
It's a giant tree. And the emotion is really, you know, even though these are just animated, you know, aliens, you really feel for these people that they've lost their home that's probably been there for, you know, maybe thousands of years.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So. And then, like, this tree crumbles. All these people are, you know, either dead or homeless now. And then we get to see Neytiri's father dies.
Yeah. And Jake's like, sorry. And she's like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. You know, a babe.
Yeah. I mean, like, honestly, it's wrong time, man.
Yeah. So she obviously rejects him. And then at this point, they cut the link again of Grace and Jake. So the avatars drop. And this line that Jake, at this moment in the film, Jake says, I was a warrior who dreamed he could bring peace. And that gave me chills. And I was so sad for him. It's such a good line.
Yeah. Well, he did get to do that later on. Sort of.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it does end well, but it's just like, oh, so sad. So, the Omotsukaya people, I feel like we should take a moment of silence for all these
every moment of silence.
We just keep going, though. The Omotsukaya people head to the Tree of Souls. The yes. scientists are in prison, and Trudy and one of the science team members, Max, breaks them out. So, escape scene. Brat.
They steal one of their shuttles.
Yeah. Grace is hit. I love her line. This is going to ruin my whole day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, when she gets shot. And then they steal one of their, in the Hallelujah Mountains, they steal one of their, like, research areas or,
yeah.
I don't know, buses or whatever you want to call them.
So they're like old, they're like the size of a train car.
Yeah, and they're like modules, and they just take one.
Yeah, so they pick up one of them, and Trudy flies it
close to the
Tree of Souls as she can. Right. You know, they can't be tracked there. The Tree of Souls is really what throws everything out of whack. So
because of the flux.
Yeah. So at this point, you know, Grace is hit, and he's going to try to get the Omotsukaya to take care of her. So he heads back into his avatar and wakes up in the ashes of Hometree.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that his avatar survived the burning of the tree. Also, where is Grace's avatar? So anyway, Jake finds Hizzy Kren and decides to do something drastic.
Yes.
And I love the foreshadowing from earlier in the film. So he's going to take his Ikran up high and drop down on Taruk. And let's remember that Taruk already tried to kill Jake once. So.
It's much bigger. It's much more powerful.
Right. But that means that Taruk was choosing Jake way back in the middle of the film. Mm. Just saying.
Yeah. You think that's him choosing him?
Yeah. So.
Or looking
you
for
have
lunch.
To choose your Ikran. And if your Ikran tries to kill you, then that's your Ikran. So Taruk tried to kill Jake. He chased after Neytiri and Jake in the middle of the film. I think he was choosing Jake then.
Interesting theory.
So, now Jake rides Taruk into the Tree of Souls, where the Omatsukaya are praying for a solution.
They're having a drum circle.
Right. But guess what? Jake Sully is the solution.
Yes. I have the solution. I got the answers that you're needing, people. Right here.
Right. So he and Atiri make up. Jake profoundly addresses Sute. Sute recognizes Jake as one of the people, only because of Taruk. And Jake asks to bring Grace to the tree. They lay her body across from her avatar. And Moa explains that the tree will take Grace's consciousness, her soul, feed it into the tree. And if the Mother Ewa permits it, Grace will pass through and awaken in the avatar. Well, it fails.
It don't work.
Yeah, but Grace is granted a beautiful death, knowing that the All Mother is real and that she's with her. Really sad. Another sad moment that we're not really going to give a pause for, because Jake doesn't either, because Grace dies and then he immediately looks at Sute and asks permission to speak.
That didn't work.
Speech. It was so good. Have I mentioned that I love this movie?
Yeah, I know. It's very obvious.
So they gather the clans, and you know, Taruk Makto was Rider of Last Shadow. He brought the clans together in the past in a time of great sorrow, and now it's happening again. So Jake tells everyone to gather the clans to take on the Sky People. It's glorious. Aaron, what did you think of the differing clans?
Oh, I thought it was cool.
I wanted to know.
You had, like, a horse people who are, like, more on, like, the grasslands or something similar to that.
Like the plains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the ocean people who lived off by the oceans, and they were all, like, sky riders.
Yep.
And what was the other one that was?
Basically, like, on elephants.
Oh,
but they weren't elephants. They were, like, larger beasts.
Yeah. And so it was... you know, you see them kind of racing around and trying to gather the clans, and they're just going to do a counter strike for what the Earth Sky People have done, the Earth people have done to their world,
and what they'll continue to do to their world.
Bastards.
Yeah. So the RDA sees that the Na'vi population has expanded exponentially into this main area. So they start rigging some crazy shit to take them down. But the fight will take place at the Tree of Souls.
They're just going to drop a shit ton of explosives on top of them.
Yeah. And let's remember that the Tree of Souls is their direct line to Ewa. So Jake goes to the tree, bonds with it, and prays for reason from Ewa. Shows him all of his memories of how Earth died and how, you know, Earthlings are the ones who destroyed our planet. He knows that Ewa is about balance and not justice or vengeance, but he begs that she acknowledge that the Sky People will tear this world apart, and he needs more than just the Na'vi to win this war. And another great sign, you know, line, I will stand and fight, you know I will. And again, that's a callback to his legs. And I just, I'm like, such good writing is going on in this film.
Very circular.
Yeah. I just love it. And I loved when the day finally comes for the battle. I loved seeing Jake Sully on top of Taruk with his machine gun. You know? He's got the war paint, and he's got the beads and the regalia.
But I also got
his machine gun. But he's got his machine gun. I'm like, yes.
Yes.
How odd. I thought of this while I was watching the film this time. How odd is it that the Colonel's call sign is Papa Dragon, and I keep referring to the Ekrans as dragons?
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I thought that was weird. Not that the whole fleet aren't referred to as dragons, but I was just like, oh, wow, that's weird.
Yeah, I didn't know. I didn't pick up on that, but
yeah.
You know, you've seen it probably more times, paid more attention than I did.
Oh, so many times. This was when Michael deployed the first time. Like, I usually can't sleep through films. I watched this film so much, I could probably sleep through it. Most films I have to watch every single time they're on, because I'm always like, what's happening?
Right.
But if I hear this film, I can play it in my mind and I'm good to go.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So we're here. The fight scene is here.
And the attack begins.
It's upon us. So the RDA infiltrates the mountains and the forest. And I cannot describe this sequence in the air. Basically,
no, it's too
people
hard.
Die. Bombs are dropped. Epicness is epic. I love, you know, Trudy, you know, you're not the only one with a gun, bitch.
Like, yeah.
You know, I wish Trudy was my spirit animal or like my inner Holly. I don't know.
Yeah, she didn't make it though, did she? Or I don't know. We don't really see.
No.
I mean, her ship gets shot down, but we didn't see her die.
It explodes. She's gone. Yeah. She, for some reason I thought that she sacrifices herself. But she ends up being, you know, blown to schmitterines.
Schmitterines.
Like, schmitterines.
Mm. Yeah. Little pieces of Trudy everywhere.
Poor Trudy. I wanted to add, cause there are so many visual things that are amazing. But I will never be okay when there is a warhorse on fire.
That was disturbing.
Isn't it always?
Just running through the forest on fire. You're
on
like,
fire.
Whoa.
Yeah, I'm getting chills right now.
There was this, and it's all, you know, it's all CGI. You're like, yeah, it's nothing.
It's,
but it's like,
know,
that's a
but it,
it's creepy.
It hits your heart.
It's creepy.
It really does hit your heart.
Yeah.
And then, so yeah, so they're still fighting, and the RDA is closing in on Neytiri. Mm. And, you know, when Jake asked Awa for help, Neytiri's like, she doesn't choose size Jake. And he's like, yeah, I know.
I know. But I gotta try, right?
You gotta try. Well, Awa sends in the cavalry. Unmanned horses, Ikran, hammer-headed beasts, dogs, and nature just attacks. And
yeah.
And that panther-like creature... We get to see the Thanator, and it chooses Neytiri to be her rider. And I just thought that was the coolest thing, you know. Most of the creatures, you know, they all have their different things. Like, the horses, they'll just ride with whoever. The Ikrons will only ride with one person. And then this Thanator comes up and bows to Neytiri, like, I'm yours,
yeah.
Lady.
Yep.
Like,
yeah.
Let's do this. And I'm going to cry because it was so good.
That was pretty cool that she got that badass, what do you want to call it, steed or whatever you want to
call it.
Yeah,
her mighty steed.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like He-Man getting, was it Battle Cat?
Battle Cat.
So, yeah. Pretty cool.
Yeah. So from here, Jake takes down Papa Dragon, but he lives.
I know, that bastard just keeps living.
I know, and I'm glad that there are Marines, soldiers, sailors who just never give up and persevere.
But
Colonel is a total
ass.
He killed Neytiri's panther beast. Like, F him. Like, I just hate him. He's such a bad guy. Even though I'm so glad that there are rough and tough rigor Marines out there.
Sure,
like
you need them. You
do need them, but I don't like the colonel.
But you want them to be good-hearted people.
That's true.
You know, there's a difference.
Yeah, yeah. So he, speak of the devil, he's about to kill Neytiri, but Jake steps in, which is another great scene when Jake battles the robo-jock the colonel survives in.
robo-jock.
Oh, man, I loved that movie, Robojocks.
Oh, man, that's great. It's a hilarious reference.
Right?
I haven't thought of Robojocks since the 90s.
I think about it all the time. I have not seen it, and I really want to find it so I can watch it again and just talk to my little 9-year-old self and be why did you like this terrible movie?
I saw it in the theaters.
I know it's bad.
I saw it in the theaters. It's not a good movie. Was it with, what's his name? The Kung Fu, not Kung Fu guy. Oh God, why can't I think of his name?
I can only picture the main guy.
Blood,
I don't
the
know
blood
his
sport
name
guy.
At all.
Jean-Claude Van Damme. Van Damme.
Was he in it?
Oh, I'm pretty sure. Now I gotta look it up for a second. Robojocks.
Robojocks. Rabbit hole.
I just had to make sure it's him. Well, maybe it
if
wasn't.
It is, he's super young.
No, it wasn't
he's got
him.
Like a light brown hair.
No, it wasn't him. Why did I think it was him? Maybe I'm thinking of another movie.
Maybe.
No, wasn't. Sorry.
It's okay.
My mistake.
Well, anyway, he jumps out of his plane in this big Robo-Jock battle suit thing, and this is what he's fighting Jake in. And it just so happens that where they're fighting is right near the lab that they placed next to the Tree of Souls. Yes. And the Colonel realizes he can just go...
And kill him right there.
Exactly, for Jake's body. So, busting through the windows was enough because, I mean, Jake's in his pod. It's a toxic atmosphere, and he's not wearing any kind of protection against the atmosphere. So, he starts to suffocate, but the Colonel continues to, like, try to, like, find his body and crush his body. And Jake is so damn determined that, like, when he starts to suffocate and he wakes up in the pod, he puts himself back under to defend himself in his avatar state. Like, I just absolutely loved it. Materia is, like, trapped under her panther. She finally gets free. And just as the Colonel is about to take out Jake out, she takes him down with an arrow. And then a second arrow, and it's just so good.
And that's the end of the Colonel.
It's the end of the Colonel. But Neytiri, somehow, you know, she realizes what's going on. She guards Jake's avatar, as she did at Home Tree when Jake first tried to tell the people that the Sky People what their plans were. But he's in the lab suffocating, and Neytiri realizes this, jumps into the lab. And this just really shows you how big they really are, because they're freaking huge.
He's like a little baby doll next to her.
Yeah, she sees Jake because at this time he's flopped out of his thing, and he's reaching for an oxygen mask.
And she puts it on him, and you got the whole "I see you" kind of thing, which is like. It's sort of like when you chew into, a sucker with as the gum in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what it is. she chewed through the hard coating, and now she's got the chewy gum inside, which is the actual human version of Jake Sully.
And you know what? It's what's so great about this is, you know, she's not repulsed by his sight, like the sight of him. She's not repulsed by his human state. She, you know, I don't even know if she knows that his legs don't work, but, like, I don't know. It's just a beautiful scene where they aren't seeing color, age, race, gen. They just see
each other,
and it's just so beautiful.
It's nice.
Yeah, so Jake lives.
Jake lives, and we see them do that. Actually, first we see them kick everybody off of the Pandora.
The sky people are sent back. Yep,
they get the fuck out.
Mm-hmm. So. The time of great sorrow ended, and Jake sends Taruk on his merry way. And then, so the last bit is the last video log,
and Jake saying goodbye and say, who knows if this works or not, but then he's. Goes to the Tree of Souls, where they try to do the same thing they did with Sigourney Weaver's character, and they try to pull him into his own avatar permanently, and it works!
It works! He is now Jake Sully of the Omotakaya of the Na'vi, and chief of the Omotakaya nonetheless, and it just so great.
And they feast on his dead human corpse.
Oh, yes, of course.
No, they don't show that. That's the end of that, and
that's
the end of the film. It's a very long film. It's 3 hours, but there's just so much to pack in there. It's unbelievable.
And we covered it we talked a little bit here and there, but it's only been an hour and 20 minutes so far, so.
That's not bad.
Yeah, half the time. Don't watch the movie, just listen to our podcast.
You don't need to watch the movie. Our words paint enough pictures. We're so descriptive. You want to go first and talk about it since you have such a
love for it? I do. I really do love it. One thing I'm kind of disappointed on, I discovered that there's an extended cut.
Oh.
Apparently they paid a lot of money for a completely useless opening scene of Planet Earth, but 20th Century Fox wanted it, so they, on the extended cut, they had them put in an extra scene, but there's a ton of unedited film on the extended cut that I'm dying to get my hands on. Mm. Yeah, this film, you know, like I said, I love the storytelling from start to finish. You know, when he talks about being in cryo, or, you know, it's not actually being in cryo. He's in cryo when we're seeing him, but he talks about when he lost his legs. Mm-hmm. Well, he has right. his legs. When he lost his ability to walk, you know, lying there in the VA hospital, it, you know, it felt like I was flying. And
right.
that leads to the end of the film where he is Turuk Makto, and he is, you know, swift on the wind with his Ikran, and, you know, he can run and jump and fight again. And, you know, it does, it comes full circle. And there are so many other great little things, you know, once a Marine, always a Marine. You know, he carries who he is with him through the whole movie. And, you know, granted, we don't know much of Jake Sully before the Avatar program, but he doesn't ever feel like he changes too drastically. It's almost like he was always meant for this life.
Mm.
And
yeah, like he was born for it.
Yeah. And actually, that's one of the lines in the movie. He's like, I'm not much of a horse guy, but I was born to do this. When he was mm-hmm. riding his Ikran. So, or Ikran. So, I just, you know, I think that the writing was done really well. Visually, it's a beautiful film. Why is the Avatar so hot? I don't know. It's weird because he's a big blue alien. but he is. That comes down to not only, you know, the character behind the face, but mm-hmm. all the work that's put into this film. I mean, I need to see all that behind-the-scenes stuff. The fact that the majority of this film was done, like, in a green room
yeah.
is amazing. The way that these actors are able to convey so much emotion and they're just able to be so genuine, like, it's just phenomenal. I yeah, absolutely yeah. love it. I know... After you tell me what you think, we'll talk about this whole stupid Fern Gully thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Fern Gully. I've never seen Fern Gully, so...
I will tell you about Fern Gully, and you're going to be like, yeah, that's not even close. So go ahead and tell us what you think about this movie.
I love this movie for a lot of the reasons you put. I mean, I think the movie is well-crafted. Script-wise, it's great. Visually, it's probably one of the best movies... easily in the last 20 years, maybe longer. Technology wise, what they gave the audience with the 3D and everything else, it's unparalleled. You know, it really mm-hmm. is. And I know now it's weird because technology is going faster and faster. And now, you know, like we're getting movies like Avatar now, like every, you know, 3 to 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I mean, this was like really, this was it. I recently watched with my daughter. I watched the original Wizard of Oz. You know, when that scene when she walks out of her home and into Munchkin Land when it's yeah. all in color. That was the first time there was fucking color.
Right?
I mean, can you imagine people just blowing their minds, just saying like, "What the fuck? What am I watching?" You know?
Yeah.
It had to be incredible.
And kudos to the director of that said, we have the ability to do this in color. Let's not do it in color when she's in the real world.
Yes,
you know?
Like, exactly.
Kudos it's to that
so,
director for that
so cool.
idea.
So yeah. cool. and this is, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's not, I don't know if we got the same visual. I think, honestly, I've said this over and over again. I think we are a little spoiled these days. I think mm-hmm. we get so much great content on, like either through streaming services and movies or whatever, you know, we get so much great content. I think we're a little spoiled. I honestly yeah. believe that if, you know, Star Wars, A New Hope was released, you know, tomorrow, people would poo-poo it. Mm-hmm. They'd be like, oh, these effects are all stupid and the story is predictable. And I honestly believe that. I really do. I think we've gotten to this point where, you know, everything is like, you know, we're so like, I've seen this before, I've seen that. And that's the other side of this is, I've said before that the story is, has some common tropes. But if you think about it, when George Lucas did Star Wars, I mean, he was just, he purely was focusing on the hero's journey by, the author and, I don't want you, he's not a historian. He's more of a, religious studies, guy, Joseph Campbell, you know, just basically following what are the typical archetype, hero's journeys through his or her adventure. And that's what we see Luke Skywalker go through. With this, I think we're seeing a little bit of that, but also we're seeing so many other things in play. First, obviously, you know, Europeans have not been kind to indigenous people throughout our world. We've seen this Trail of Tears, and up until recently, we even see the people in Standing Rock with the Dakota Pipeline, you know. Mm-hmm. We see this all the time, you know, we do not treat indigenous people well. Right. You know, it's like, because we're just like, fuck it, we can make some money. Get the fuck off, you tree huggers, you know? And, you know, yeah. Is it like Pocahontas? Yeah, it's like Pocahontas, but we keep seeing the damn story. I mean, up until, you know, 2016, 2017, this is still going on, you know, over on, you know, Standing Rock and, you know, the Dakota Pipeline. This is still happening. And it goes on. It goes on in Brazil. You just, with the deforestation of the rainforest there. I mean, it just doesn't end. And I just, this is not a story that has not, it needs to be told more. And I think it also needs to be, you know, thought about a little more. It's like, and this story brings it to full, like, you know, like you feel for the Na'vi people, and you want them, obviously, you're like, you know, if you're saying Native Americans or maybe indigenous people who live in the rainforest of Brazil, you're like, well, why don't those people just move to a city and get a job? You're like, why? They're happy where they're at.
Yeah.
That's their home.
Completely content.
It's their home. It's where they want to be. Why would we kick them out? Why do we want to take their home? Like, would you like someone came to your house and just bulldoze it down and just like, get the fuck out. There's some, you know, gold under your house or something. Or, right. You know, oil or whatever, you know. It's, I don't know. We are not good when it comes to that. And yeah. I know that even Star Trek, you know, it covers that in different points. I think I talked about a little bit in Insurrection in the very beginning of the show, but this is a common theme. So, yeah, is it like Pocahontas? Yeah, but this is something that happens over and over again. So it's hard to like say, you know,
how many versions of Cinderella do we have?
Yeah,
you can't count.
And that's what, like I was mentioning before, Joseph Campbell talks over and over again that we see the same stories through, if it's Greek myth, if it's, you know, King Arthur and his round table or, you know, Indian, religion and their myths, you know, we see that over and over again that these stories repeat themselves. There are archetypes that, either somehow that our brain is more attuned to, or there's something about it that is very common to make a story successful. I don't know what that is, but it's like they say, it's an archetype. It's buried deep within our psychology. And yeah, it makes sense that this you draw upon things that you know is going to make that story worthwhile and people attached to it.
Well, yeah, but I mean, at the same time, it's art. This is someone's
vision. Yeah.
And when you paint a picture, you know, it could be a very similar landscape to somebody else's landscape.
Right.
Or somebody else's ocean sunset.
Right. No, I agree completely.
But it's your story.
Yeah, it's I get kind of like peed off that people are always poo-pooing everything. Yeah, some things do need to be poo-pooed because maybe they're not that great. But right. this is not one of them.
It's really not. And so, do you want to know about Ferngully real quick?
Yeah, let's go into Ferngully.
So, I love Ferngully. Ferngully is one of my favorite movies when I was little. You know, the cartoons that I watched Beauty and the Beast, I watched The Little Mermaid, and I watched Ferngully. I watched other things because I have brothers and family and, you know, Star Trek and Golden Girls and, like, you know, Conan. Like, I watched a lot of stuff, but those were my three cartoons. And Ferngully is the story about, kind of about deforestation. So, there's a fairy that lives in the forest, and the story is about this guy who, he takes a summer job cutting down trees, you know, with his logging company, and there he's walking through and painting on trees that need to be cut down. Well, way back in the day, the fairies trapped this evil spirit in this tree. And Zach spray paints this tree, and that means that if the tree's painted, the logger's going to cut it down. So they end up cutting down this tree, and Hexus is released back into the world. Now, when this happens, Krista, the fairy of the story, is near Zach because she's fascinated by humans, and she accidentally turns him small, like her. And she has to save him from, like, the blades and all that jazz. And she doesn't know how to turn him back. So she has to take him to her mentor to try and figure out how to turn this human back into human size. And meanwhile, Hexus is basically now he's in the machine that's cutting down the forest. And he's going to basically try and kill the whole forest and to go toward the fairy's essentially home tree, which is the only thing that's similar. Which is home tree,
right? And the deforestation aspect of it.
Right. So basically the story is about how, you know, about Krista finding her magic, because she does have it and she needs to have the confidence to wield it. So that's what the story is about. Yes, it's about being kind to, you know, to the earth. You know, feel the cut down tree. Can't you feel its pain? Like
the Lorax. I mean, they even they have the book of the Lorax in the movie. You know, it's like, you know, I speak for the trees because the trees can't speak for themselves. You know,
right. You know? So very similar. Yeah. So in that sense, yeah, it's about being environmentally conscious, but. From what you know of Ferngully, does that sound like Avatar at all?
I mean, in the most simplistic manner, yeah. I that's the thing is, I get a little like, you know, I get people like try to be dismissive, and I wonder if they're dismissive because this is a popular movie, you know, like because this movie did so well, they can be like, oh, poo-poo that movie, you know? I don't know. I don't understand it. I really don't. It's one of those things that I really wish. I really wish that, people would be a little more, you know, I guess not so snooty.
Yeah. It's kind of like what you were saying, how we are, we're spoiled and it makes us unappreciative of things.
Yeah.
It's just like a spoiled kid. They don't appreciate what their grandparents get them because they get things all the time. Like,
right.
You know, same thing with film and, you know, media. People get so persnickety because they can. And and that's their right. They should, you know, like what you like, but acknowledge that maybe slow down and watch something with the perception that this is someone's art and it's not meant for you to pick apart. I mean, I know that's basically what we're doing is we're not picking apart this movie, but we're reviewing this movie. And what I think people think that reviewing things means breaking it down and analyzing everything. And, oh, the color of his shoes meant this. And now they're anti-gay because they wore yellow shoes or some crazy shit. That people come up with, and it's just like wear
yellow shoes. No, but I know what you mean. But I feel that I think in both ways. I mean, obviously, like with Discovery, like me, you, and Dave, we've talked about Discovery, and there's been times we've been a little harsh here and there. But it's not in a hateful manner. I don't see it. We've been more of just like, I don't think this part of the story made sense. Or, I like this part of the story, but I didn't like this character. Or whatever, you know? It's like, that's an opinion. And, like, here we have with Avatar itself, you know, are there things that maybe I could get into and pick it apart? Maybe, but honestly, it's a testament for what it is by itself. I really think it's like one of those things that you could try to, I mean, I could try to pick apart like one of my favorite movies, Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back. Mm-hmm. I could pick apart that movie. I mean, there's lots of things I could pick apart that movie, but it's like, why? It's well done. It's put together well. And it's just like this movie. I can't, like, there's nothing glaringly awful about this movie. The acting superb. The directing superb. Like you said, the writing, they have these, you know, circular motifs that we see over and over again get told to us. And so it's ridiculous. I mean, yeah, maybe it's not your cup of tea. Okay, I get it. You know, maybe it was too successful and you have to stay on the outskirts and, you know, stay with the unknown stuff maybe a little more, you know. Mm-hmm. I get that too, but I don't know. I think this movie deserves the credit it gets, and it's there's a lot of movies I could say maybe they don't. Actually, I'll tell you the truth, I was never a fan of Titanic.
No?
I saw Titanic. I don't think it's a terrible movie. I just don't think it's as great as everyone brought it out to be.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about the Titanic lately, which is funny that we're doing this film. But
this movie,
because I was reading a couple of articles about the Titanic, and they recently released some photos in color of the Titanic pre-voyage. So once it was completed, and they're so great. But I've been thinking a lot about the film. Yeah, it's boring.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a good film, you know. See it once.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously it's a historical love story.
Yeah,
and you know, it has its place too. Don't get me wrong. It's just, but I saw it. And I was like, I'm not really moved by it. It didn't do a lot for me.
Yeah, I don't think that it. I don't know if it was meant to or not. But
some people did. Some people definitely did.
Well, what's the meaning then? Because really, it's just a tragic tale. It's not a tragic tale with a moral. It's just a tale of some really shitty thing that happened. Like,
Romeo and Juliet. I mean, it's, you know, they poison each other. I mean, they poison themselves.
Yeah. I mean, the moral of that story, though, is not to, it's basically to, you know, love thy neighbor.
I guess.
That's the moral of that story.
You know, family grudges or whatever else. But I know, but I'm just saying, it's like, you know, tragedy and love and romance is always kind of like rolled into things. You know, it's like, it's a common story. But honestly, it just, I'm not saying, honestly, Titanic's not a bad movie either. It's just, it never did anything for me. I could go the rest of my life never seeing Titanic.
You know what's funny?
Mm-hmm.
I will watch the documentaries over and over and over again, but the film, while a great film, it's not high on my list of rewatches.
Yeah, I mean, it's like something like, maybe it was on TV and I was in the room, I'd sit down and watch for a little bit, but I don't think I'd watch the whole movie. It's just, you know, and that's me saying too that I don't think it's a terrible movie, but I could do without it. This movie, like Avatar, I think is much more imaginative, and it tells a different story, and it's just so interesting, and the world building is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And I am actually, I know you said you weren't excited about the sequels. I am interested to see how it works. I don't think it'll ever measure up to this movie.
Right.
But I think as long as he's not trying to recapture lightning in the bottle.
Yeah.
I just hope that he just tries to tell that story in an interesting way.
I mean, so because this was done in 2009, or at least released in 2009, so that means it was put together before then, you know, it's going to be cheaper to do similar things now.
Yeah, for sure.
So I could understand if it's just a moneymaker. I mean, 20th Century Fox is now owned by Disney, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, Disney has rights to Pandora. They're making a park section for Pandora.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's a money thing, okay, fine. But please market it accordingly. So, like, if it's going to be, you know, this is a PG-13 film with very, like, there's no gore, but there's people, there's death. And there's sensuality. And there's alien language. Fucking. And, like, it's like, market it accordingly. I don't want to go into another Avatar film thinking that this is going to be another, you know, a continuation of Jake Sully, you know?
Well, the Jake Sully character, Sam Worthington. He's coming back for those. He's slated for them. At least,
if that's the case, I want to see him protecting the people.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe sharing their knowledge with other planets or something. But I don't want to see, like, a spinoff where it's, like, about kids. Do you know what I mean?
Avatar babies.
Adolescent Navi. Like, I don't need to see that. So, like...
Hilarious.
I mean, they... Granted, because of their lifestyle, they'd be quite mature and whatnot. But I just... I'm glad you're excited. I mean, I feel like this movie was a complete... It was complete. So, I can't even fathom what to expect.
Yeah, it has that bottle, like, you know, it's all there in that bottle. Yeah. You don't leave that bottle. Yeah. I don't think he's ever gonna, like, James Cameron's ever going to get better than this movie. I just hope that he has an interesting story to tell, and it's a story that's worth telling.
Right.
You know, and not just some, you know, dribble. He just thought, you know, these are, you know, maybe what I thought could happen after the movie, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, one of our Synthaholics wanted us to talk about the impact, but the environmental impact that the film was supposed to have that it didn't have. And, you know, I realized that, you know, my DVD came with a Avatar program where you could help plant trees and all that stuff.
Was this something they tried to set up during that?
Well,
I'm not aware.
So there's just like, so join the Home Tree Initiative, be a part of a worldwide effort to plant 1 million trees. Have an individual tree planted in your name, interact online, and learn about more Earth Day activities. Like, this little outreach is great, and I think it's important, and I don't think it's far-fetched from the film, but I don't think that's mainly, you know, it's not the whole purpose of the film. The film, while obviously is about treating your planet better and taking a moment and reflecting and appreciating what you have, it's not all about tree hugging. It's really not. And I don't know. I don't know what kind of impact this film had on the agricultural state of the rainforest. I don't know. I don't live in the rainforest.
I don't think it had. I don't think it did. But
yeah, I don't think it did.
I think. It's a tough one. You know, art should impact people in their lives. And if it's done right, I do believe it does hit people and it makes them think maybe I shouldn't be such an asshole kind of thing.
Right.
You know, and maybe, you know, enough people go see, you know, Avatar, and they're like, man, maybe I shouldn't do that, you know, maybe we should think of a different way to do this. But, you know, the issue is like, you know, like I said, you know, we have the deforestations in Brazil and, I mean, all throughout the world. We also have, like, I mentioned Standing Rock, you know, where we had, you know, the Dakota Pipeline going through and ignoring Indian their, sovereign nation.
Their burial sites, yeah.
Yeah, their sovereign nation, and, you know, and we've just ignored that. I don't think we really care. I think, honestly, I hate to say it, but I mean, there's a reason why when you go into cities, the tallest buildings are the banks and the financial institutions and not churches. And not to say the churches have all the answers all the time either, but it used to be that you go into the cathedral or the church was the tallest, you know, structure right. in the city. Now it's, I mean, money is our
driving force
for everything. And it's and it's sad. And I wish there was another way. I mean, I own my own business. I believe in, you know,
free market
and making money, but there has to be, just like when you're on the road, there has to be some rules or people just start driving up on curbs and driving the wrong way down a different street, on, you know,
sidewalks and wherever yeah. they'll fit,
killing babies and dogs. But,
I
mean, there definitely has to be some kind of control here and there and holding people accountable for their actions. And I don't see that happening. And I don't think a movie's going to do that per se. I don't think there's ever been a movie that's made people stop completely. I even think about, like, one of my more favorite movies about nuclear war, Dr. Strangelove, and what a sobering movie that is. I mean, it's like sort of a comedy, but it's also, you're like, holy shit, yeah, we could be on the brink of, you know, nuclear war. But, you know, does that affect people? Does that make people stop and think? I don't know. Maybe in the long term, maybe if you, in the long view of saying, like, people see this movie and they see other movies like that and they go like, you know, maybe we need to do a different way of doing this, you know?
Yeah. And, but you've got to be careful too, like, with assuming that, because once something becomes normal, people put it out of sight, out of mind. That's kind of like how I feel about, like, you know, gender issues and, you know, like women equality issues. Like, I just live my life like we're equal, and if somebody treats me like I'm not equal, they're going to hear about it, because that's how I feel. It should just be lived the way you want it to be.
You have to admit that when you're talking about larger powers at force of, you know, like giant corporations looking to influence government to cut down tree where indigenous people live, or, you know, there's things like, I mean, it's nice to fantasize, like in Avatar, that the natives could attack these people and do something, but it's
because they're so much larger and their bones are basically carbon fiber.
Yeah. I mean, they're totally different. Yeah. You know, humans shooting arrows and, you know, whatever else weapons they might have against, you know, whatever we have to throw against is not going to do it. And,
yeah.
I mean, and you saw, you know, here in America, Standing Rock, we had, you know, you know, tons of protesters, and they're just flatly ignored, you know,
yep.
They're flatly ignored by the Obama administration and flatly ignored by the Trump administration. And, it means that, you know, what people want, what big business wants, they'll get. And I don't know. I do. Yeah. Should you stand up and fight? Yes. What you believe in? Absolutely. Whether it's environmental issues, whether it's gender issues or whatever you have going on in your life that you feel that you need to rail against. But that might be a very long road.
Right.
And you might not, I mean, you might not get any solutions from that for a very long time. It's difficult. And maybe by the time you finally get some traction, the war's over, you know? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's
But, like, at the same time, as you said earlier, like, you know, having more films like this, it could go one way. It could go either way. It could influence people to be more planet conscious, or, like I said, it could put it out of their minds altogether.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. It could just be like, that's somebody else's problem, or you know what? That's yeah. I don't see that in my neighborhood. I don't see that in my life.
And most Americans do not
see any take of those things
seriously until it happens to them.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. I'm guilty of it 100% myself. And I wish I could be better, but, you know, we all get wrapped up in what we have to do, our responsibilities and assigned duties in life. So,
yeah, well,
you know, I mean, it'd be great if I could run off to the rainforest and help, you know, stop deforestation,
you know,
but I'm needed right here, right now.
Yeah. And it doesn't take running to the rainforest to make change. You're mindful, you know. Yeah, we're going to have the kids' birthday party next weekend, but instead of going out and buying paper plates and cups, we're just going to use this. And, like, that's impactful. People don't realize how impactful that is. I have friends who use paper plates for every meal, for everything. And it drove me nuts, but it was in my house, so whenever I was there, I washed dishes and I used plates that were in the cupboard, and, you know, I helped clean up so that they didn't have to, you know, feel like the fact that they cooked dinner and had to wash dishes, like, ugh, I wish we just had, like, could throw away our pots and pans because, ugh, dishes. Like, some people just don't want to do the
dishes, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, they live off of paper plates, and military spouses are real guilty of that because their spouse is gone and it sucks. And
hey, I was a bachelor. I was bachelor for years before I got married, and I know what it's like to try to cook on your own. Yeah. You cook on your own, and there's like, you know, like everything's made for four or two. Yeah. You know, and it's like you're all like, oh shit. You know, I got all this extra food. I don't know what to do with all this. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a thing. You don't think about it, but it's true. It's true. So
it is.
Yeah, I mean, and there's so many things, from the furniture we buy to, you know, I mean, it just goes on and on. The list goes on and on, what we could do to be better custodians of the environment.
Well, you know, people don't realize, like, yeah, we've got reusable bags, but, you know, we've got the option for, you know, mesh produce bags, so that every time we go to the store to get some ears of corn, we don't have to put them in plastic bags. You know, you can legitimately have reusable glass milk jugs, go to your local farmer, trade them in, get milk, like fresh milk. Like, there are ways to reduce.
There are ways.
And
there are ways.
Yeah, that, you know, that particular, you know, example takes time and effort, but simple things like not using paper towels, using
cloth
napkins for your dinners. Like, not that this episode has to become about fixing the environment, but no, I mean, you know, I don't remember the gentleman's name. But he just mentioned the whole impact about the, you know, Avatar, and I don't know what they attempted to do when it came out. But
all I can hope is that everything, and maybe we don't have it, honestly, maybe we don't have the time, but maybe it's a slow arc to changing public mind. And, you know, Avatar obviously captures imagination, but does it make you reflect on your decisions? And yeah, I mean, does it make you, I mean, I know sometimes I'll see like some documentary about, you know, like the, you know, coral reefs being bleached, and I'm like, fuck, I gotta start composting or something, you know, I gotta start doing things different, you know, and, it's true, and maybe I should, and maybe I should take things more seriously, but it's just one of those things, like, you know, like, there's so much to consider in our daily life, and all of us have
and there's
so
a ton of stuff,
on.
You know, that and our government regulates, like, Irish Spring beaded scrub body wash. those beads are not biodegradable. Yeah. So when they go down your drain, they go into our water system and into our soil. Like, they don't disappear.
And they don't go away.
Like, it's very misleading that a scrub body wash is, you know, healthy.
I mean, there's lots of things. It's like, you know, flushing your old medicine down the toilet and...
That goes into the water system.
That goes in the water system and it affects the fish. Mm-hmm. Like, they've definitely seen that the fish has traces of all sorts of different, like antidepressants and all sorts of other things. In their systems, because the fish's biologies are very susceptible to this environment. And it's weird. It's so weird. So, there is a lot going on. And honestly, I think that a lot's affecting us as humans, too. I think there's a lot of reasons why we are sick. Who we are. That what's due, all the chemicals around us, everything we're taking in, either through, medications in the water, to the food we eat, to the... you know, nutrients that we put into the ground, you know, I think it all cycles down. We are technically like a more simplistic version of Pandora.
Yeah.
You know, that everything is an ecosystem and it all, you know, slowly works into our system and we do terrible things to our planet. And no doubt that people, you know, get cancer or people get, all sorts of other diseases and issues. You know, I don't know. I'm sorry we ended it.
I was gonna say, and now all the we're doing so good. Are like, wow, Aaron and Holly assholes. Are the tree huggers of the group.
I am a bit of a tree hugger, but I'm not a good one.
Right. We all,
I used to be a lot better, but when I got wrapped up in my kids and, you know, all the stuff like that, it just, a lot of things go out the window because you just got too much going on. And I wish there was ways to make things easier for everybody to kind of latch onto things. And I think it's just, maybe I just have to be a better person.
There's a lot that can change in your life when you're mindful of your actions and your decisions. And it could just be something that you focus that affects your life personally.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, yeah, your mindfulness could affect the globe. But, you know, just being mindful of what you're doing and understanding, you know, the repercussions of your actions, so important in life.
It is.
And, you know, what is it? Parker says something in the film like, what have you guys been smoking out there?
Yeah.
You throw, what did you say? You throw a stick in the,
someone
in
gets
the
mad.
Mud and it's some sacred mud.
Yeah.
But it's true, yeah. But I think that the film was great. I asked a couple other, you know, I asked people to share their thoughts on the film and...
That was really the only thing
we got. And then David with his Fern Gully thing. David, you're wrong. It's not Fern Gully. Love you, but it's not Fern Gully.
Dave decides if he doesn't like something, he'll never like it.
Yeah, I mean, I love Fern Gully. And
I guess I'm going to have to watch
I love Avatar. Yeah, it's cute. And Robin Williams is in it, so it's a classic.
Nice.
Regardless. One of his songs is like my favorite ever. Gets stuck in my head randomly and I'm like, yo, my name is Betty. And I'm like, why? Where did this come from? I have no idea.
Why now? I'm on a job interview.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, there's actually this part where he was a test subject in the film and he's like singing this song about himself.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, it's Robin Williams. So,
of course, it's
he's
funny.
Talking about being a cosmetic test subject. And he's like, all of our cosmetics are non-carcinogenic.
Oh, my God. Like, that's hilarious.
For some reason, that part gets stuck in my head all the time. Anyway, that has nothing to do with Avatar.
Yeah.
So, ultimately, I love the film. I think, you know, if you don't like it, I'm sorry. I maybe maybe listening to this podcast will change your perspective. If it doesn't, that's okay. It's okay if you don't like the movie.
Yeah, you don't have to like it.
It's fine. But we liked it, and
I liked it. I think it's worth seeing.
Yeah. If you like film, it's a movie you should see.
Regardless of whether or not you like
the story.
Yeah, it is something that people should see for sure. And yeah. I don't see why, I don't know, whatever. It's hard to fathom. I understand maybe it's not your favorite film. I don't know if this is my favorite film, period, but I mean, it's a well done movie. There's no getting around it, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. Should we wrap it up, Holly?
Yeah, we probably should.
All right.
We're at the 2-hour mark. It's like 11:30, 12 o'clock for you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's true. It's late. So, yes, let's get into our outro. So, as Dave would always say, our intro music is done by Dave Wilkes. The rest of the music is done by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com and something at Twitter. I don't remember. You can, Synthaholics, obviously, you can find us at synthaholics.com. You can go to our Facebook, facebook.com/group/synthaholics. Join the group there. There's always, we talk about Avatar and Fern Gully, and I don't know what else. We talk about a lot of things, lots of things, and people get,
sometimes people get heated up.
Get heated up, but most...
Which is good.
Most of the time, people are just silly.
Yeah.
Most times.
Lots of memes and...
lots of memes.
Yeah. Love a good meme.
A good meme is go get you through your day sometimes. If it's just enough, you know. It could.
Yeah.
Honestly, there's some memes that have gotten me through a bad day. Yeah, so we got that, and so definitely go check us out there. Definitely check us out on Twitter as well. The show is at Synthaholics Duo. I'm at Blackbird2004. Holly's at Lunar Thistle, and Dave's at David_J_Duncan. Tweet at us. Let us know. Do you like Avatar?
I really want to know. Because I didn't realize that people didn't like this movie until I posted on the Facebook page.
I don't know if people hate this movie. I think it's just like too cool for school kind of shit, you know?
You think so?
I think that's what it is. Maybe I'm missing something, but if I thought this movie was bad, I would have definitely said something about it, but...
Right.
I don't know. Yeah, but as well as that, if you can go to our... go to Apple iTunes, rate and review us there. That'd be wonderful. Leave us 5 stars. Say something nice about us. Also, if you can go to our Patreon.com/Synthaholics, leave us $1 a month. If more, if you can, that'd be wonderful. It helps support the show, help us get more content out, and do more with if we had a little more fan support. And of course, as always, if you can't do those things, we understand, but the easiest way you could possibly support the show, you know, talk to us about, you know, to your friends, share us on social media. You know, if you have a blog, write about us on your blog or drop our name someplace in on your, you know, on your podcast, on your, you know, YouTube channel or what have you, you know, just, it's a great way just to help us out and spread the word. And we're very receptive to what people's ideas and maybe subjects you want to hear us talk about. If we feel it's in our wheelhouse, we will definitely consider that. So, yeah, definitely.
I mean, we talked about ice pirates.
We talked about ice pirates last week, people. I mean, come on. That was a silly movie. I mean, we went into like the Dark Ages to the Renaissance. Within like a week.
In space.
Yeah, in space. Right. Exactly. So, I mean, within a week we did that. So think what else we could do.
Right.
So, yeah. Yeah, definitely share the show and it'd be wonderful. Anything else you want to say?
Yeah. Holla at your podcast.
Yes. And next week, unfortunately, we won't have Dave just because of scheduling purposes, and his avatar is still all fucked up in the ass. So we will have to go on without Dave just one more week. But after that...
He had sex with the wrong fern.
Oh, he's got some... He's all scraped up and whew, ain't good.
His poor Fajili.
Yes. Oh, no. All right. Well, as Dave will always say, live long and prosper, one and all.
Yeah, I know David's going to be disappointed that we didn't make as many sex jokes as he would have. And I guess, so we're going to do what? Stranger in a Strange Land next week?
Yes.
Yeah. So guys, if you're still listening, and you like the book or have it or haven't read it yet, we're gonna talk about a book called Stranger in a Strange Land.
By Robert A. Heinlein. It's a classic. I mean, it's I don't know what to say. There's so much to talk about. It is a classic. If this works out, I think we should do more books. Like I said, we should do the sequel to Ender's Game, we should do Speaker for the Dead. That's an interesting book. It takes a totally weird turn for the character Ender and his sister Valentine.
That's gonna be awesome. So this was really fun. Thank you for humoring my.
Well, we did Aquaman that one time, so you know. I mean, that was humoring my geek side of loving Aquaman. So.
I'm going to pour myself a drink in a sec.
Get yourself a drink.
Are you having anything tonight?
Yes, I'm having scotch.
Nice.
I just ran out of my scotch, so this is my last scotch drink. But that's fine. I shouldn't drink more than three a night, so.
Yeah, yeah. Scotch.
Scotch, fall down. Fall down on my face. Scotch. Why are you so wet? Don't thank me. Spank me. No, I'm sorry. That was a Dave joke.
Oh.